Okay, so in this broad category of parenting, we are now talking about discipline, which has a fairly expansive meaning. What do you think of when you see that word discipline or hear it? What are you thinking of?
Order.
What?
Order.
Order, okay. Order.
Training.
The discipline. Training. Okay. What do we usually think about? I mean, I know this is a Bible class. You're getting all the right answers, but what?
Spanking.
That's been right to the heart of it, right? Correction. We're always thinking about correction. We talk about church discipline, in fact. You get that title up on your in a sermon or a class, you're immediately thinking about corrective discipline. You're thinking about, you know, dealing with someone who's been immoral or otherwise rebellious. But discipline is broader than that, and we're talking about the whole training process. And the point of correction is to train. We are talking on the back of page 7 about corrective discipline for a bit. This tale of correction, the way I put it, there are four things that I believe we ought to always correct no matter what. Not that we can let some things go necessarily, but these are the things that I think really go to the heart of what a Christian is and should be. And so one of those is lying. We've talked about a couple of these already, but disrespect for truth. Lying is a disrespect. So you need to take strong action when you discover a lie. Don't put your kids in a place, or don't set them up or entrap them so they have to tell a lie. If you know that they went to a party that they weren't supposed to go to, don't ask them if they went to the party they weren't supposed to go to. Don't ask them. Don't put them in a position to lie. Just deal with it. Tell them you know about it, you know it, and then deal with it from there. I learned that from my father-in-law. He came up with it. It was pretty good. Talking back and assessing is disrespecting authority. We need to establish authority early on with kids. I think that's extremely important. That's the A of this. We got to L then. It's paramount that we teach our kids to love others. Does that come naturally? But they just almost say they come out about they're 2 years old and they just love you and they say we love everybody and not quite right. They tend to be children as they grow, you know, as they get old enough to express themselves, they're pretty selfish, and that's, you know, the way it should be. They're self-centered. That's just part of the growth process. So we have to teach or train them to love others. So just what in the context of what we're talking about here, I'm saying, I'm suggesting that we take strong action when they show disrespect or a lack of love. That's the point of this. How do you, let's take a minute here though, how do you show them or how do you train them to love others?
Demonstrate it.
Demonstrate it. Don't, you know, we're not always perfect in that, but that should be our goal, is to model that for them, to show them what that means. What would be some other, maybe, synonyms that come to mind for loving somebody? What would be some other terms that we might put under that broad category of loving others?
Being kind.
Being kind, okay. Kindness, definitely.
Nurturing,
okay. Nurturing. What other things, Rick?
Attributing a benevolent motive instead of assuming that people are doing something better.
Okay, giving people
decisions we wouldn't make, and we disagree, but that doesn't mean they're ill will.
Okay, give people the benefit of the doubt. Uh-huh. Love believes all things. What else?
Compassionate.
Compassion, show compassion. Jesus taught about all these things, didn't he? He taught about service. That's a word that should come under there, right? To serve others, make your life about that. So, we're again in what we're talking about right now is corrective discipline. So we need to correct those things that show disrespect. I put bad manners on here. That's not just necessarily Miss Manners, or whoever the, who's the manners guru these days? It used to be Emily. What was it, Emily Post or something? Did I go back? Yeah. Anybody remember her? Most of you remember? A few of you do. So what am I talking about? What think along with Dave here. What why did I bring this up? Bad manners. Yes, Jack.
I think from my experience that manners is just like thinking about others 101. I mean, it's the most basic thing, and you can teach the kids just about at any age, and it's something that you can develop a habit, and it forces you to think about other people when you have to say please and thank you. Okay. Just those two common things. I mean, it's just a basic building block, and as I often spiral out of control and figure out how to fix the world, maintain that if everyone had manners, a lot of the problems would disappear. Yeah. I mean, for instance, you wouldn't have, like, road rage or that kind of stuff, or, you know, if we simply had good manners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Yeah, like Amy, you're going to say?
Basically the same thing, but when Alvin and Vivian were little, there was this little short on Disney. It was Playhouse Disney then, and it was like manners with Max, and it said manners are how we show we care about other people. And I'm totally just like, I'm just gonna appropriate this comment and just say it like that was a nice encapsulation, I thought, of like manners are how we show we care about other people.
Yeah, it is, and it's very important, and we see a lack of that in a lot of cases. And Randy,
we've all done embarrassing our lives, and we've done bad manner things throughout our lives. But we go through lives mentoring, whether we know it or not.
Yes, right.
And it's when we look back and reflect, we go, man, why did I do that? Sometimes you can't go back and fix it. And sometimes when you try to, it just, you do worse.
Yeah, right. Mentoring, is we do that all the time. We're always an example.
We've been trying to apply practical application. Mm-hmm. The Target Dollar Spot has these little flashcards right now. Mm-hmm. It's like a little flashcard set for manners. So we bought it, and like if we're in the car and we're like busy, we just go through our different things. And I have learned things myself, like correct manners or whatever. So if you have little kids, those are good.
Good. Little a tip here, where to get, this at Target? The little dollar section at Target.
And every mom needs an excuse to go to Target.
But I do think this is one of those areas of parenting that it seems to be with most people, it's an all or nothing. Like either they don't do it at all, and children, I mean, these are the kids that are in my classroom, they have no concept of other people and thinking about other people. It's not even on their radar. Mm-hmm. So this really is an easy one for us to just try anything. Just let it be on your radar. And that gets the message across to the kids that the world isn't about them. And that's a really big shift. And yeah. I have one little thing that, because I don't do this, Amy does this, right?
I'm sure you model, please, and thank you, dear.
So, but before we ever get to anybody's house or any event, the radio turns down for the last 5 minutes of the drive, and she previews what's going on. Okay, now when we get there, you know, you're going to say thank you for having us over, and you're going to eat what's on the plate. And she does that, dude. Before we go anywhere with, I mean, not with the older two now, but still with their 9 and 7-year-old. And that's just, you know, if you do it, then whatever you're doing is awesome. But most people just don't do it at all, I think.
Right. We have a little example set every Sunday night at our house,
right,
with 30 high school kids. And then, so I'll leave it at that for maybe just inquire about how they doing. Just so we've got all these chairs sitting out in the middle. We got a little candy bowl, so they get candy. You know, they get candy, which results all the candy is wrapped. So the wrappers end up somewhere. There's food that they're eating all through the house. So there's that. Some of them go outside, so it's not a factor, but birds take care of that. But I'm just saying, you know, it's interesting to watch because that does reflect on things. Angie?
I think this is a maybe a good time for a plug for thank you notes. They are almost nearly obsolete. And I am so just, I just think it's so neat when I get a thank you note. Like when I have, and we've all done this, or not all, but a lot of us host kids for the boot camp or different things. And every year I get maybe one thank you note after camp. I know Matt and I both have gotten a thank you note from probably two or three of the kids that come to camp. And I'm not perfect in that. I don't think my, you know, I just think it's a really good learning experience for the kids to sit down and have to do something. Saying thank you is great and it's important, but making them take some time out of their day, having them sit down, it's an exercise that reinforces thankfulness.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of sad that thank you notes just aren't a thing anymore.
Yeah. Randy?
Just a plug for the parents in this classroom. I'm spoiled, one of the elders. I get thank you cards fairly often. You're doing some good stuff.
You can look at my wall. I've got them all over my wall. Thank you, or comments or stuff. You know, there's stuff that I tell kids if they give me one, I say, you made the wall or something. Because some of them go in a drawer, but, you know, I can't put them all up there. But, and that's happened fairly recently. And I know Angie's talking from the parental standpoint, not that we do anything because we're looking for that, you know, you're right. I mean, that's not why we're doing it. But it's just nice. It's a nice training tool, I'd say.
Yeah. Speaking from the kid perspective, I wasn't raised with manners. I think it was maybe a 70s, 80s thing, whatever. But it was weird to me with Amy. She has manners, and so she's doing that for our children. But from that kind of side of it, I look at these things like thank you notes, and I'm like, that's just dumb. What is this about, right? I don't get it, right? I think it needs to be said. It's not about the thank you card. It's not about the please and thank you. It's not about any of those things. It's the selfishness. Mm-hmm. And that is, I mean, I was very selfish, and I've grown out of it, I hope. But it's that's why we need to do it as parents. It's not about the manners. It's not about the thank you. It's about the heart. But it's a good way to remind them constantly that things aren't about them and that other people are important.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to reiterate that from the perspective of someone that manners is not my culture. I
mean, yeah.
Becoming so.
Becoming so.
I hope.
Now, I was thinking about this, since you guys are commenting on this so much, I was thinking about this in terms of my youth, too. I saw my mom had great manners, and she corrected me, you know, different things. But I don't know if I necessarily translated that over to when I was in other places. I think I did some of it kind of just ignorantly. I just did it because that's what I figured you're supposed to do. But it does take, my point is, you can see it, but you've got to teach it as well. It's not, you can't just model things and expect the kids to pick up on that. They kind of take that for granted. What you do, you also have them do things. I think that's the point of the notes and stuff. Have them do things that will actually give them the thing. And when they get the response from that, that might encourage them to keep doing that, or at least keep thinking in those terms. Because I know when I get those, I try to make a point to really brag on the kids, to them, and sometimes to their parents. I haven't told you all what your kids have done, but bad or good. But, yes?
And you hit on this earlier, kids tend to be self-centered,
mm-hmm.
But when you have principles like do unto others, what you're doing is you're comparing what you would like and then applying it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to have respect for ourselves, but when we have respect for others, that's what God wants us to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Politeness or any etiquette is from that type of thing.
Yeah, we could really make a whole class out of this because, I mean, there's so many ways this is expressed or not expressed. I mean, not only what we're talking about, like you go to somebody's house, but also, you know, respect for teachers in classes. We've gotten some reports of the high school class sometimes that some aren't as respectful as they should be to certain teachers. And they had, they've gotten a few speeches about that. You might want to talk to your kids about that if you have a high school kid. But the point is that it's a broad thing. You know, we think of manners. We think of, okay, these are kind of cultural norms or something. But it's more than that. It goes right to the heart, as you both have said. It goes right to the heart of what you're trying to do first in Christ, of course, and then it goes to the heart and dealing with that issue of selfishness that we all struggle with from time to time, obviously. Okay, we're going to move from there, though, and we'll come back to that, I'm sure, at a couple of different spots. The E here is ethics, and I use D because that works. I'm talking about morals, basically. Tom wouldn't make much sense, so I use tail. And this is just, again, these are when I feel like you should really press the severe button in your discipline, when you really get down to making sure they understand these four things. There may be others that probably are, but these are four things. And of course, this is just being moral. Morality is defined by God, not as defined by the world, which is always changing. So I think that's some of the examples here: inappropriate attire, corrupting language, laziness, abuse of the internet. These are things that need to be corrected on the spot when you see it. You don't wait. You don't kind of pass it by. We'll take care of that later. You deal with it then, right then. Any thoughts on that? I mean, that one maybe is the most obvious, it seems to me. Maybe not. What's the at issue there, just very quickly? Why is that so important?
Problems?
It comes back to that again, doesn't it? Because if you can, once you give a little bit, once you give in a little bit, or allow a child to give in a little bit, they're going to go further with it. And then we have the constant cultural pressure. We get the example of the culture. So we think if we stay a little bit, you use whatever side you want, we think we stay a little bit right of where the world is, that we're doing okay. But that makes that a moving target then. We're always, the target is never changed. There are moral principles in Scripture that have not changed. And just because the culture's doing it, there's some cultural things. I mean, I'm going to get into a long discussion about that. I mean, none of us dress like they did in the first century. I mean, we can stipulate that. But there are things that are right and there are things that are wrong. And clearly, those are things that need to be taken care of and dealt with.
Creeping corruption.
Creeping corruption, yes. It's the camel with his nose in the tent kind of thing. You know that story, right? Okay. Don't have to. Well, I know you do, Randy, but it's the frog in the kettle. Got that one? Everybody got it.
I like something that Rich said earlier in this quarter, in this class, about how our kids need to be, I think he did say the word weird, they need to be different, they need to be strange, and it's hard for us as parents to want to be different from the world, so it's even more hard to expect our kids to be different and weird and strange. And I think a lot of the things under this ethics paragraph make them feel weird and different and strange.
Mm-hmm.
And like Rich said, they just need to learn. They got to be weird.
We had a whole camp on that, didn't we? FC camp. Whole the week was devoted to being weird.
Except everyone there was weird.
Yeah.
We hope.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's okay. It's not only okay, it's necessary to be weird. That's what we don't get. You know, it's okay to be weird. Because there are some quirky kids, you know, kids have little things that idiosyncrasies and stuff, but that make them a little quirky. But we're talking about being weird in light of the world and morals and these things. Rich, you doing that?
Yeah, I was going to say the one that I think is really hard in here is laziness.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a problem that I have, and that's why it's hard. But it doesn't go away. It's not, at least in 16 years of parenting, it's not the, you can't just really concentrate on it for a month, 2 months, 6 months, and it's gone. work ethic is really hard to build in our culture, I think. But, you know, it's all over Proverbs, too.
Yes, right.
Just like this whole thank you notes. Jesus heals 10 lepers, and one comes back.
Right, and says exactly.
So these aren't new problems. But I think laziness, specifically in our culture, that you can just play video games all day long and get away with it as a teenager. It's so hard to just get them to see the value of hard work. And if anybody has ideas, Jack, I'd love to hear. Because that, I got two more coming up that I don't see any work ethic out of them at all. And it's just, it's hard. It's scary.
We raised the heat in here a little bit.
I was just going to say, to me, I almost wonder if this last one isn't one of the most difficult, just from the aspect of there's going to be constant pressure from everything around them. Some of these other ones, like lying, they may see an incident of it here and there, cutting and all this other stuff. But I think all the things we've been talking about, they're going to see this near constantly in some form or another in everything that's around them. Mm-hmm. Hence to the your point about being weird and standing out. But I think this is the most constant pressure they get is probably in this area.
Yeah.
Is all of these things, and so we have to be ever more vigilant to stay on top of it, to talk and to explain why, and take the time for this one just because of the amount of pressure.
Explaining why is huge, and I think as we move through some of the other areas that we'll discuss in the rest of this quarter, that's very big, especially as the kids get a little older, because I think that's, in my generation, as I've mentioned many times, I think that's what was missing. There were a lot of rules, but there weren't the whys attached to it. We didn't, you know, just don't do that, and you'll be. It's like you built a fence, like the Jews did with the law. You know, they built a fence around the law. They didn't say that, so don't say God anymore. They don't even today. If you see in the Jewish thing, you have G-D. They don't say it. Just get, you don't. If you don't really utter the name, then you can't ever. Not utter it in vain, right? So those kinds of things, the fence building went on. Okay, so we had some other hands up. Randy, I think you...
Yeah, this, on the laziness thing, and I don't want to embarrass Rich, but other than Amy, I'm probably going better than anyone else in the room, and lazy and Rich just don't go together.
No, I know. We know.
But that being said, we modeled what we want our children to be, whether we do it consciously or not. And a week ago yesterday, I had an opportunity to have their two oldest with their cousins for about 4 hours, and they were anything but lazy. And they learned that at home. I think they might have seen a little bit of grandpa, too. But laziness is one of my things and has been for as long as I can remember. I remember once when I was a little boy, maybe 8-10 years old, I made the mistake of one summer morning saying I'm bored.
Yeah.
My dad fixed that and I never said it again. But they learn that from what they see from the people that are closest to them. That's usually their parents.
Right.
And if they see their parents sitting around doing nothing, and you know, when there's stuff that needs to be done and it's not getting done because they're, so that's what they're going to be like.
Right.
But when they see mom and dad just always active doing stuff, whether they, mom and dad, see it right away, they're learning. And they will model that as they mature and become independent.
That's right. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think there's a progression when you're talking about laziness and work ethic. As a child, a lot of these kids, like the teenagers, you have them, you give them a task. They're going to work hard for you. But what are they going to do when they haven't been told exactly what to do? I think as parents, we're trying to get them to learn to see that there is something to do. A lot of times they don't see that there is something to do.
Yeah. Good point.
So they're happy in the state that they're in because there isn't something telling them I need to do this. So even as adults, I think that's a skill that's necessary. You see that a lot in the workplace. Our oldest is working now, and she really stands out from other people her age because she knows how to find something to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're never, she's never sitting there waiting to be told what to do next. Mm-hmm. She finishes something, she doesn't just sit there and wait until she's told something else. She goes and looks for it. So I think that's part of the progression of parenting is it's a process.
Everything is a process, yeah. And that's true. You're right, most of the kids will do eventually. They'll be like the two brothers. The one said, I'll go, and then doesn't. The other one says, I don't. I didn't, and he does. But but they eventually will get it done, perhaps. A lot of hands are up. Christy?
The other side of that is if your child does do a job that you've given them to do and they don't do it as good as you think they should or that you just go in and do it over, it discourages them. So they decide, well, why try? Because I can never do it good enough.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful that that's what that happened with somebody I know real well, and they just said, well, I can't do it as good as my mom wants me to, so I'm just going to. But we've got to be careful as parents not to be lazy in seeing when they're dressed inappropriately, because it's a lot of work to be a parent. And a parent needs to always look to see and be on top of things.
Right.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. The work ethic thing is big too. Those tie together because it takes work to be a parent. I mean, you can't just say, I'm not going to be a parent today. You don't get that day off. You can sometimes ship them off to the grandparents and they'll do that, but for a day. We blame anything that's, and Angie's perfect, you know. So, but Angie and Dave, anything that's amiss and that you see in them, we blame on Sam and Barb. That's because they kept them just about every weekend, so, you know, and their influence is probably even bigger than ours, so. I know Lisa had her hand up.
I just wanted to say about the video games, it does control itself because they'll play them when they're able to, but once they have more to do in college, they don't have time for it.
Yeah.
So I was afraid too. Are you just going to be, you know, live at home at 30 and change?
That's good to hear, Lisa.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just when they have to put in.
I'm afraid that's not always true because those are my students, right?
Yeah.
But they're not in college yet.
No, my students are in college. And about halfway through the semester, they're not in my class anymore, right? Because they dropped. So, and I mean,
to play video games.
For Jesse, it worked, but I mean, I don't know. It's.
Oh, it's a big deal.
It
can be.
It is.
I don't know if addicting's a word, but it's certainly obsession.
So working at group homes, they would have posted behaviors and expectations, and then they would have the consequences with those. So if a girl knew that, you know, she left something out at night after bedtime, you know, in the common area, then maybe she would, you know, have some table time or whatever, you know, she had to sit at the table. What I liked about that is that the behaviors were listed, lying, stealing, and the consequences. And if your kids, like, you know, what was being said earlier was about if your kids, or if you communicate to them what you want them to do versus kind of like, you know, they know ahead of time, if I do this, this is the consequence. If I do this is the consequence.
Right.
This is maybe the list of, you know, appropriate clothing. So so if your kid comes out wearing something inappropriate, so let's look at the list. You know, is it on here? Is it okay to wear that? No. Okay, so I need you to go change. Yeah. You know, so if they already know ahead of time, they're not going to be shocked when they get that consequence.
No. Right. That's actually, when you get to methods, that's actually number one. There's communication, belief. It seems odd that we have to say that, but that's true. You have to communicate. Okay. Thank you for those. And I could go, there's two or three areas that we could just like spend forever on. On the work ethic thing, that's what I learned from my dad. And when he got older, he apologized to me because he didn't go to all my baseball games and stuff like that. And he was working all the time, that's why. But as for in terms of a lasting example, that was the better example. To see him, most of the time he'd come in with sawdust on him because when I was young, he was a carpenter. He preached full time later on, but when I was he'd go out and work at carpenter. Then he'd come home, take a shower, put on a tie, always put on a tie, and go out and be doing something for the church. It'd be something, Bible classes or something. Often he was preaching, you know, as a carpenter. So I just saw that all the time. I didn't see a whole lot of him, which made, you know, my choices of TV entertainment all mine. I didn't have to, when he was home, we had three options, you know, and one TV, and it was Gunsmoke, you know. But I saw that, so I think that's a really important point. So, we talked about this on the first page, and I brought it up again over here. Most Bible, it's down at the bottom after all this, most Bible teaching of behavior can be placed under one of these categories. The objective, however, is not only behavior modification. What is the long view, big picture purpose of discipline? Use something other than teaching the heart, because we've talked about that. We understand sometimes that needs explanation anyway. What's a Bible word that might answer that question? What's the long term, big picture point of all this?
Coming to Christ.
Sanctification. Let's say? Sanctification. Sanctification, okay. Sanctification.
Transformation.
Romans 12. Be transformed. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed. What is transformation? When we get back to sanctification, we use these big words.
Metamorphosis.
What? Yeah, the Greek word actually suggests, you know, you're kind of morphing into something else. We kind of use the cocoon, the butterfly kind of thing, or the caterpillar, the butterfly. As a little caterpillar, two caterpillars, I've got to get this in there. Two caterpillars were inching along, and one caterpillar looked up and saw this big, beautiful butterfly above him, and he moves along, and he says to the other, says, "No way would you get me up in one of those things."
We, with our children, we want to bring them under our authority and control when they're young and little. Then we want them to grow to where they're self-controlled. But the ultimate goal is we want them to be under the authority of Jesus.
Right.
We want them to be under Jesus' control. And, of course, that's a choice and a determination they have to make. And as with all of us, it's not a one-time choice. It's a constant choice. It's a series of lifelong choices, right, or choices over our lives. So we want to bring our children to the point that they make that decision to say, I'm going to be under the control of Jesus. When we start out with them when they're little, we're, you know, putting boundaries and forcing things on them. But if that's all we're doing, we're not raising adults. And there's plenty of people out there that are good parents by the world's definition that may be raising responsible people, but our goal is not just to say, well, I want to raise a responsible adult. I want to raise somebody who follows Christ.
Right, right. And that's the goal, transformation, sanctification, into the likeness of Christ, imitating Christ. That requires a lot of thinking about, because we say, I want them to be under the control of Christ. That can become a platitude, right? I mean, that can become just something we say. It has to be actually thought out. How am I going to do this for my kid or kids in the short time I have? You don't have them for very long. And they say by the time they're somewhere between 5 and 10, their personality is pretty much formed, right? So you've got not a lot of time to get that done, and you have to think about what that means. And of course, we talked a lot about example, of course, and all of that.
I wonder if anybody else, we went to a congregation some time ago, and all the kids in their services went to the back room because they said, well, the kids just can't sit there that long. And so we're going to have a class during worship.
I'd rather hear that if they feel it's not appropriate, so we can have an argument.
I was just surprised that I saw this, and I think that's a trend.
Yeah. Well, the denomination, let me just say this. Denominations are complaining about all the kids that are leaving their denominations, their community churches, everything. Everything they've tried. Willow Creek Church in Chicago, largest church in the United States, actually put in a youth program with a lot of entertainment and all that kind of stuff. They had all the kids go out into the cradle roll, they call it, where they have numbers around the auditorium. So each parent signed a number. So if your number lights up, you need to go attend to your child, you know, out there, not in here. So they did all that stuff. And then, but they had, it was interesting, they kept track of it all. They kind of just took kind of a measure of how all that was going. For seven years, and what they found out was a miserable failure. All this stuff the church tried to do was a miserable failure. They lost between 50% and 70% of the kids just quit when they left. When they went to college, they were done. When they got out of high school. That's happened to some extent in all churches. I don't know. You guys visit other churches? Do you see a lot of kids? You see a lot of older. You see, even, you know, it's real. I was just having this long conversation on email with somebody. They're looking for a church in this huge metropolitan area. There's a lot of churches, probably 20 churches there, and they can't find one where any of the kids are faithful anymore. They're just a bunch of people that are older, and the church is dying. That's the fact. That's the way it is. So, you know, that I kind of spun off of your point, but they haven't been trained, obviously. Okay, I'm going to go Ashley and then Rich. Okay.
We visited a church in Texas when I went to visit my family, and they had something like that. At first, I didn't know. So, you know, I have my kids with me, and I'm like, oh, there's no kids here. I don't know. Okay, whatever. And then later, like, oh, we have the red carpet room or something like that for the kids, and they go there. And I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, off of that, like, my first response to that was like, oh, yay, I get to hear a service, you know, yay, about me. But then I think about it, and I know, you know, in my heart that my job is to raise up my kids so that they love the Lord. And, you know, even though it's hard and it's difficult, and some days I feel like I can't do it, I know in the long run that that's what I need to do, and that's what Christ wants me to do. So right. It makes it easier. At the end of the day, when it's all said and done, it's like, yeah, I did it. Accomplished something today.
And from a preacher's standpoint, I'd much rather have you doing that than they're all to be tucked away someplace to be dead silent in there. Everybody paying attention to me. I like it when they pay attention to somebody else.
Right. Well, I really like the idea of self-control. That's kind of the point of all of this. But mm-hmm. Even more than that, I think what we don't like to say, just as a society, is obedience. And that makes us feel like dogs. And we think, you know, we're like salivating when the bell rings or whatever. But it's, you learn obedience as a small kid. You learn self-control out of that so that then you can render obedience, which right. takes self-control to actually be obedient.
Right.
That's the whole goal.
Right. Yeah, and that's the starting place. And then you try to get them to, we've been through that. You get them to obey, and you're going to try to get them to the point where they want to obey, right? And for the right reasons.
I had an experience with sort of that type of an idea. We were a small church in Reno for a while, and there was another church that was probably even smaller than us, and they were they were probably only like four families or something, and they came and started worshiping and attending with us for a little while, and they had some more liberal views on some things and that kind of stuff than we necessarily did. And one of those things was about the children. And one of the dads came to me after services one day and said, you know, we've always just had the kids out of services. They never come in. I just don't understand how you guys get your kids to sit through services. And I said, well, it's just what they've always known. You know, like, we'll take them out if they're having a problem, and then we bring them back. And they just learn, and they understand that this is how we're supposed to behave here and that kind of thing. And that was just, they didn't want to go down that road, and they're like, well, we need to have a place for the kids to be during services.
It's a lot of work to go down the road.
Yeah. There's a lot to I think you probably got the last word.
To Christy's point, I mean, not knowing all the details about that, it sounds like there's an element of let's do it this way because it's easier and it's more convenient. Mm-hmm. And I've just, with maybe the common thread with a lot of the things we're talking about, is I've just always been suspect of the easier thing and generally felt like the more difficult thing is probably better. That's why it's more difficult. But in the long run, it seems like that extra difficulty is there because it's designed to, you know, and whatever these things are, make you better. So with the work ethic thing, you know, I always say, well, yeah, work stinks. That's why they call it work. It's it's supposed to. And so with all of these things, it just feels like we're creatures of habit. We probably all have this. Sometimes we just want to take the more convenient, easier pathway. And we probably all cut that corner every once in a while. We're just done. We got it. I'm just going to have to do it that way. But in general, in the big picture, with our kids, when there's conflict or when there's a challenge or when it feels like this is really hard or this is really difficult, that's probably, I'm sure there's going to be exceptions to this rule, but that's probably an indication that you're in the right space.
Right.
You're in the part that's making you work a little bit and sweat a little bit and power through a little bit. And that's what I think we're trying to get our kids to do ultimately. We don't throw them into the hardest possible thing and watch them fail miserably. We slowly train them to get a little stronger and a little stronger so they can handle a little bit more and a little bit more and eventually be able to deal with the rigors of life.
And that's true for everything, isn't it? I mean, anything worth doing or having starts with difficulty, begins in difficulty. I mean, marriage, I mean, a job, a really good job, education, it all fits that model, doesn't it? Starts in difficulty and then goes on. Okay, I think we're to the bell ring.
First bell.
Goes first.